4th of July in the afternoon with Sarah, John, Sukin, Venerable Panyabahulu, Azita, Linda and Betty.
I think it was yesterday you were referring to the paramis. Here I have a quote from the Charyapitaka that the aspiration and also the great compassion and skillful means are conditions for the paramis. Is this just for the bodhisattva?
There is also Savata Parami too. Mm-hmm. So there are Samma Samputto Parami, Pajjeka Putto Parami and Savaka Parami.
But here it would just be referring to bodhisattva Parami or anyone. Okay. So when it refers to the aspiration and the great compassion and skillful means.
In the book for Buddha.
Mm-hmm. Only bodhisattva parami,
but it does mean that nobody can have such parami, but less than that, less than bodhisattva.
And when it refers to how the bodhisattva, it says when he has attained the direct knowledges, he may inspire a sense of samvega in the negligent by showing them the fate and establishes the faithless, etc. He makes him enter the Buddha's dispensation. Now, when he has attained the direct knowledges, is this just referring to the abhinyas? But
can be from the very beginning at moment of satipatthana.
Yes. So how, before he's enlightened, can he establish the faithless in faith, in wisdom, and make them enter the Buddha's dispensation?
Even now.
I see.
Okay. We do have.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we can encourage mm-hmm. others even yeah. though it's not fully mm-hmm. developed. Also, when we talk about inspiring samvega or having samvega, which we know is referring to right effort, I think, with wisdom, can one refer to samvega in an arahant?
Already get rid of all the defilements.
So no need for uh-huh. samvega, so no samvega in an arahant.
All gone.
No more work to be done.
And a friend also asked us, leading on from that, why the Aryans, especially the Arahats, continue listening to the teachings or need to continue listening just to develop more wisdom.
So what should one do from there to there after right. being an Arahata?
Yes. Better to listen to Dharma than anything else.
The best
else.
Thing. Nothing else can compare to that.
Well, I have a question about the Lohicha Sutta and about the bhikkhu who has attained the goal but teaches others and they complain and they criticize and are not appreciative. And he is criticized even though he has attained the goal. Are you familiar with this?
I think that it's so common anytime to be criticized.
But was criticized by whom?
It doesn't matter, as long as anyone would like to criticize it, just do it.
No, but this one is by the Buddha. The Buddha taught us that even if a monk has achieved the goal of the contemplative life, he's still worthy of criticism. And then the quote is, there is the case where a certain teacher has attained the goal of the contemplative life for which one goes forth from the home life into homelessness. He, having attained that goal of the contemplative life, teaches his disciple, this is for your welfare, this is for your happiness. His disciples don't listen, don't lend ear, don't put forth an intent or gnosis. They practice in a way deviating from the teacher's instructions. He should be criticized, saying, you, venerable sir, have attained the goal, da-da-da-da. Your disciples don't listen. It's just as if having cut through an old bond, one were to make another new bond. I say that such a thing is an evil, greedy deed for what one person do for another. This is the third teacher who is worthy of criticism in the world. And when anyone criticizes this sort of teacher, criticism is true, factual, righteous, and unblameworthy. Are you familiar with this?
Seems to be a criticism of the teacher for things done by the disciples. Is that right,
Sam? Why he would like to say anything, can you stop them from criticizing?
No, but here it seems the Buddha is saying
That he should be criticized.
He should be criticized. So, in effect, the Anarahata is doing wrong in teaching.
Because the other would like to criticize. So he should be criticized by those who would like to criticize. Or it means that the teaching is not good enough.
You mean his understanding is not good enough? Or?
The listeners, the disciples.
Oh, listeners. So he should be criticized because he's teaching at the inappropriate time?
It depends. There must be the person who criticizes. If they'd like to, they would, anyway.
Okay. There's one thing for the disciples to criticize or third persons to criticize. But here the Buddha is talking about that he should be criticized for what he did. It seems to me that's what.
Because the disciple didn't get it.
Oh, I see. So his teaching isn't good enough?
It's good for those who can get it.
So when the Buddha himself taught and some people didn't get it?
They will say like the other belief would say.
We don't know whether this should be criticized means that people should criticize him or if their criticism is valid.
It may be a problem with the translation.
This raises a question that I would think of discussing with you. Okay, what about, for example, one occasion a whole group of monks came and they were very noisy and ill-behaved and the Buddha refused to address them or to go to them. And another occasion where the Buddha gave a meditation to monks on the loathsomeness of the body and they committed suicide. In the case where the monks committed suicide, the commentary says that they would have died anyway because they had done some bad deeds or something. But I don't see how you can blame the Buddha or you can blame the teacher. I mean, I was a teacher before I was a monk. You can't blame the teacher for everything.
What about teaching to the foolish one or the one who does not like to listen? Should the teacher be blamed or criticized? Because the listeners is not the proper one to talk about
even
the teachings.
If, even if the teacher is Narahant.
Yeah.
The question is whether he should even bother to try to teach if somebody doesn't want to listen.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, that's the question.
You got a reference for us, yeah?
Digha Nikaya 12, the 12th sutta in Digha Nikaya, Lohitta.
Lohitta sutta.
I think we give the Buddha a very hard time because he taught for 45 years, and that's a long time. And his own wisdom would also have developed. I mean, he didn't just stop under the tree. He would have continued to acquire more and more in-depth understanding of things and of people and so on and so forth.
He had omniscient knowledge from that moment.
Omniscient. Now, he had the ability, so they say, to know whatever he wanted to know.
Right. Whatever he put his mind to.
Yeah, exactly. So he didn't know everything all at once.
Omniscient already means that the understanding was the fullest. That could be.
He's not like anyone in the world.
This is the problem, because I have a great need for the Buddha to have been very much an ordinary human being before he was the Buddha. Otherwise, for me, it becomes an unreachable...
He was before he became the Buddha.
You're right.
This is another sutta that we've discussed a lot and actually mentioned to you, but here I have it, about the 500 lay followers with Anathapindika. The Piti Sutta. Householders, you attend upon the Sangha of monks with robes, arms, food, lodgings, and medicinal requisites for use in time of sickness. But you should not remain satisfied merely with this. Rather, householders, you should train yourselves thus. How can we enter and dwell from time to time in the rapture of seclusion? Thus, you should train yourselves. Pavi Vekam Pitim. And the commentary says, the rapture arising in dependence on the first and second jhanas. And when he heard this, Venerable Sariputta said to the Blessed One, it's wonderful, Lord, it's marvelous, Lord, how well spoken was that statement of the Blessed One. whenever a noble disciple enters and dwells in the rapture of seclusion, on that occasion these five things come to him, etc. So first of all, the Buddha seems to be suggesting to the householders that they should dwell in the rapture of seclusion, here referring to jhana.
Satipatthana.
When it says pavi vekam pityam, and the commentary says the rapture arising in dependence on the first and second jhanas, this is referring to the rapture of seclusion of the path.
To those who have accumulation, like monks. Because the teachings of Buddha includes everything, not just that passage.
Right.
When it's deal with that samadhi, it talks about all samadhis. Okay. So now it can be not exclude the jhana.
But the question is, Anathapindika and his followers, and these followers have been hunters and are ordinary people, why he would be mentioning jhana to them?
It's like now we talk about kusala and then we talk about the path and the vipassana upakilesa and all those things.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Didn't the quote say noble disciple?
And then the second paragraph, Sariputta says, how well spoken was this? Whenever a noble disciple enters and dwells in the rapture of seclusion. But, of course, they are not yet noble disciples.
How do you know?
Because when they attend, as far as I know, there's no indication that they have become noble disciples as yet. I seem to remember they were still hunting at this time, but I'm not sure. Does that mean that they must be noble disciples?
We don't know.
But he's just saying, now you shouldn't be satisfied, you should also dwell in rapture of seclusion. So it's like saying to everyone that...
Anyone.
Anyone with the accumulations for it. So it's like saying to us, one should also be developing metta or generosity or something.
It's like now when someone, or might be the disciple, anyone, talk about the jhana. We just listen. It doesn't mean that we have to reach that state.
And if anyone does have the accumulations, you can help.
So what's the conclusion on that one?
The conclusion that he's not...
They like us.
Right, he's not necessarily saying to these lay followers, you must develop jhana, but he's saying anyone out of view or anyone else who has the accumulations for jhana or any kind of kusala, develop it.
Or from Makapala now.
But what was said before that, was it referring to the dana and other forms of kusala?
It's referring to dana. You attend upon the Sangha of monks with robes, alms, foods, lodgings, and medicinal requisites for use in time of sickness. So they're used to a lot of dana, especially Anathapindika. But you should not remain satisfied merely with this. You should train yourself, how can we enter and dwell from time to time in the rapture of seclusion? And then Sariputta mentions a noble disciple entering and dwelling in the rapture of seclusion.
So encourage more kusala.
Of different kinds, I think.
We talked about a kusala sila this morning, and I think it just passed by me. I didn't understand it. A kusala sila.
Daily life, when citta is a kusala, the conduct which is conditioned by a kusala citta is a kusala sila.
So what is sila? What does sila actually mean?
The conduct of...
It's just conduct.
But this means when there's a kusala, but it's not a breach of the precept, then it's a kusala sila.
And what would you say about a kusala kamma, which is not a kusala kamma pata? So is it the same as a kusala sila?
When it's a kusala, it is a kusala.
So a kusala kamma, and the, when it's not a kusala kamma pata?
It depends on what we are talking about. If we talk about kamma itself, it must be chetana chetasika, no matter what degree. But when we talk about kamma patta, then there are factors five or four.
So kusala sila is kusala kamma, but not to the level of kusala kamma patta. Kusala sila?
It depends.
Also, it can be both. Okay.
Because when it's kusala citta and it's not dana, what is it then?
Can you ask that again?
Yeah. When kusala citta arises and it's not at level of dana, so what that kusala is, what level of kusala?
Sila. Or bhavana.
I'm still not clear, but somehow I feel that that gives a better understanding of what sila really means when we talk about all actions being sila.
So let's talk about citta first. Akusala citta and kusala citta before we talk about sila. And when there is body and speech, according to citta, akusala citta condition, akusala sila, we call that sila, no matter whether it's body or speech, conduct. And then with it stronger, then it can be conditioned for vipaka to arise.
And I've always thought sila meant kusala.
By way of dana, at that moment is sila because there is no wrong speech, no wrong deeds.
This morning, we're talking about sila as a foundation and how it has to be sila with understanding in order for panya to develop. When we read something like this, but mundane concentration should be developed by one who has taken his stand on virtue that is quite purified. He should sever any of the 10 impediments that he may have. He should then approach a good friend, the giver of a meditation subject. Just breaking that down. But mundane concentration should be developed by one who has taken his stand on virtue. So, of course, there can't be any development of samatha without understanding. So the virtue, the sila that is being referred to there, is with understanding. Otherwise, calm cannot develop. And then when it says something like he should sever any of the 10 impediments, it's just referring to how with the growth of samatha there is more and more seclusion from sense objects. Is this what it is?
Or citta becomes more kusala.
And here when we read something like the monks are accustomed to practice continuously for a long time four meditation subjects of samatha, death and so on, in order to have calm of citta and to subdue defilements which can disturb them. I think it has to be turned round. One has to say that with the development of understanding at the level of calm, the defilements are subdued.
It seems like without understanding there can be more calm, but actually it's impossible.
It must be with understanding. This was a quote of yours. The monks are accustomed to practice continuously for a long time four meditation subjects of samatha in order to have calm of citta and to subdue defilements which can disturb them. Lay people can also practice these four meditation subjects. People read this and think that they should practice these meditations on death or something like this. The Dharma and the Vinaya which the monks practice can also be applied by lay followers in their own situation as a means of subduing defilements.
No selection.
Because the way one reads it, it sounds like selection.
It sounds like
choosing a meditation subject.
A moment ago you were saying that there must be panya in order for there to be calm. But we also know that there's calm with every kusala, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Pasadi, is it? What's the difference between...
By accumulation, or develop more calm.
So for further development, mm-hmm. It needs the panya, whereas...
And a friend also quoted you on a tape as saying, someone asked you why you place most stress on satipatthana and anatta, and your answer was that for those who have the accumulations to understand these, this is the rarest teaching. But I think that usually you would say... More than that, you would say it is the only teaching, the understanding.
It's
of the
absolute truth.
So it's not a question of it being the rarest teaching, it's being the only truth.
But not for everyone.
For those with the accumulations.
I think rare here means when Acharya is talking about kusala of any kind, why not talk about satipatthana, since you'll hear about other kinds of kusala from everywhere else, but not about Dhamma.